Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Friday is Canada Day, July the 1st. Starting July the 1st, you and I, British Columbians, could be paying more for things that we buy online through marketplaces like Facebook, like Amazon. BC government making changes that require those online marketplaces that have annual gross revenues of over 10K, which would preclude some smaller sellers, but would certainly include the online giant marketplaces like eBay, et cetera, to collect provincial sales tax rather than small businesses that may use a marketplace facilitator site to sell their goods. Here to talk more about this, we're joined by Greg Wilson. He's Director, BC Government Relations with the Retail Council of Canada for Reaction. Greg Wilson, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. Very well.
Help us understand exactly what's going to be happening here, because I'm sure many of us have bought and sold things on Facebook Marketplace before. Many of us have bought things on Amazon before. Do we need to worry, or what's happening here?
So most of the large e-commerce entities already charge provincial sales tax on transactions. So the one of the changes that they have made will enable that. So that's a good, in our view, that's a good change. That's something we've argued for years, for equity. But, you know, what they've also done is they've buried an additional tax in this bill. And it's unprecedented. It hasn't happened anywhere else in North America.
An unprecedented tax buried in the bill. You have my curiosity. What do you mean?
So what they're doing is they are taxing things called online marketplace services. And so this will be things like when you order food through an app, the restaurant may pay a commission or a fee. When you order on e-commerce, some of the small merchants that sell on these websites pay a placement fee or pay for advertising to the marketplace, a lot of them, because they want to be at the top of the list when you search. Or they'll pay for services like pick and pack and delivery to make it easier for their products to get out to the consumers. And so all those fees that are paid by small businesses will be taxable now. And the difficulty is for small businesses, they're competing. You know, something, a wool store in BC might be competing with somebody, you know, elsewhere in North America, and they now have a competitive disadvantage versus their, you know, versus businesses elsewhere.
So just to make sure I understand this correctly, the small businesses would be paying the tax on the fee that they pay the online marketplace to sell their goods. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay.
So if you order food from a restaurant, you'll be aware that often these online marketplaces take a commission from the restaurant for the food, or they'll charge a fee to list. Sometimes, obviously, people want to be higher on the list. Businesses want to be higher on the list because, you know, if you're higher on the list, the consumer will see you first and buy your product.
Mm-hmm.
So all those fees and, you know, the delivery fees and what have you are now going to be taxable.
How are the fees structured? Is it a percentage? Is it a flat rate? How does it work?
Well, it depends, you know, it depends on the service.
Mm.
So different services have different rates. And
okay.
Of course, in BC, there has been quite a bit of controversy over the pandemic about the amount of delivery fees charged by the food, you know, food delivery apps.
Yes.
But now what we're doing is we're increasing the costs. And so these costs will be buried, you know, in the price of goods that these small retailers, you know, sell to consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 7% on just those services might not seem a lot, but at a time of inflation rising, this seems a very bad time. And, you know, for us, it means that members of our industry are uncompetitive versus those based elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking in my head in terms of tax incidents and bargaining power and who will ultimately end up paying this. Because if you're the small business, and like, let's say you've got a business model that works, you can sell something for a dollar and, you know, you're only getting 90 cents of that and you're paying 10 cents to sell it through the app or the online marketplace. If suddenly you also have to pay tax on that 10 cents, suddenly you're looking at, let's round it to the nearest cent, 11 cents for that. You're suddenly a penny short in your business margins that used to work. Who's going to end up eating that in the end?
The consumer.
Okay. So prices will go up just a little bit to make room for the tax on the fee. Okay, I see.
Yeah. Hmm. And we're the only jurisdiction in North America that has done this.
Did we cap food delivery fees, or am I misremembering that? I seem to remember
They did cap food. The province capped food delivery fees, and so for the duration of the pandemic. So, I mean, whether that's kept long term or not is a question for government.
Hmm. So now the fee will be capped, but you'll pay the tax on the fee, so the government will still get its cut.
This government's getting, you know, more money. Yeah. Government hasn't been transparent about it, but the way this is structured is, of course, consumers, it'll be this cost will be hidden from consumers. And from our point of view, we prefer transparency, both transparency in terms of the cost to consumers, but also, you know, honestly for government who, you know, included this as one line in their budget speech and, you know, a small undebated section of their budget measures bill. You know, we'd have preferred more transparency about what was going on in the first place.
Yeah, the implications are huge.
No debate in the legislature about this particular aspect at all.
Huh.
You know, and, you know, government hasn't even told us how much this part of the measure, you know, is anticipated to bring in. It's bundled in with this other piece, the collecting the PST on goods sold over online.
Interesting. This is fascinating stuff. Greg Wilson is Director of BC Government Relations of the Retail Council of Canada, talking about a tax on a fee that you will never actually see spelled out for you, yet you, the consumer, will end up paying for one way or the other. Businesses have to be able to pay their costs. If they can't, they're just not going to make that sale. Why would anybody execute a transaction knowingly losing money? You'd rather stay home and just take the day off and not take the hit. Greg Wilson, thanks for your time. Any final thoughts?
No, but I hope that consumers keep the pressure on government on these things, because this is this is unfortunate, and it's making our businesses uncompetitive.
Interesting. Greg Wilson, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Have a good day. Take care. I didn't even really know that was happening. So the fee that the business pays, that you, the consumer, doesn't see anyway, will now have a tax imposed on it that the business will have to, of course, track and remit to the government, to Revenue Canada, or to whoever is going to collect those funds. That is interesting. I didn't know that was there, honestly. Like, I had no idea. I didn't catch it during budget debates, and it sounds like hardly anybody else did either. But I'm just thinking, with the number of products that are sold and the sheer volume of fees that are paid in these online marketplaces, for the government to get a cut of all of those, that should be a significant amount of money. I wonder if anybody's modeled it. Anyway, quick break. We're back right after this. 250-386-1161, *1070, a free call on your wireless device. I got somebody who has a pretty good rebuttal with respect to the physics question and gas mileage that I was talking about, driving 50 kilometers per hour versus driving 30. I also want to point out that internal combustion engines are notoriously inefficient when it comes to thermodynamics. Like, there's a theoretical engine that you can create that maximizes the potential gains of the Carnot cycle, they call it, C-A-R-N-O-T. It's a French guy. The name of that engine is the Stirling engine, and it's actually spelt exactly like my name. That's not of any relevance to this conversation more than a, hey, did you know, small world fun fact. But there is one solution that we do have that can eliminate all of those lost, I was going to call them joules, because that's the physics term, but that doesn't really sound like it makes much sense. All that lost energy that you purchase at the gas station that your brake pads turn into thermal radiation that then gets renovated or radiated out. And it's something that's staring us right in the face. Do you know what it is? I've got a texter saying it, and I'll tell you right after this break.
It's Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right, what's the factor that we're missing in terms of efficiency, energy efficiency, stopping and starting in a city environment versus highway speeds? Electric vehicles, a texter writes to me. Get better range at city speeds and have regenerative braking, i.e. braking charges your battery by a little. That's very true, and that is the optimal solution, I would suspect, to the stop-start environment that we find within the cities. Electric motors are exceedingly efficient when juxtaposed against an internal combustion engine. An internal combustion engine, you're lucky if you get just probably about a quarter of the overall heat energy that is contained. You can measure it in joules, you can measure it in MMBTUs, whatever unit of measurement in terms of the overall heat energy of that gasoline combusting that you'd like to measure it by. You're at most, like, really, really good situation, you're getting maybe 25% efficiency out of a gas engine. That's like three quarters of it is just wasted heat. And eventually all of it's wasted heat because the rest goes out through your brake pads as your momentum gets converted into, well, it's kinetic energy technically, gets converted into a thermal radiative energy by the braking system. And then it just sort of wafts away in the air. So at the end of the day, all of it is lost in waste heat. It's just for the moment, a car will take about 25% of it, turn it into kinetic energy for the vehicle itself before it too is ultimately wasted. Electric vehicles work in a completely different fashion, as all of you know. There are some efficiency issues with electric motors. Like I know the electromotive force, I can't remember, what's the name of that feedback that gets created? It was probably 20 years ago. I was sitting in a physics class. I can hear the instructor saying it. I just can't quite make it out of my memory. My apologies. Anyway, so when it comes to arguments against lowering speed limits, there are many, but I don't think fuel efficiency losses is one of them. I think you're more likely to see, as long as all the cars stay moving, you're more likely to see fuel efficiency gains than losses. But that doesn't mean that the cars will actually stay moving. If the result is gridlock and nobody can go anywhere and you have to stop start a million times because you're in a traffic jam like a crawl, and that's the problem, you're probably going to lose even more gas than otherwise. So that's the solution. As long as you can actually go 30 and you're not stopping every 2 feet because you're in gridlock, your efficiency wouldn't necessarily get worse. But if you're in gridlock, yeah, I think you would actually be a lot worse. And depending on how long the gridlock lasts, your gas would be wasted. And all of us understand that on an intuitive level. Let's go to Don. Hey, Don, you're on the air. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Adam. I hope you're doing well this morning, too. I was just going to weigh in on the speed reduction, I guess we'll call it. I think it's actually ridiculous. I think it works out to about 18 miles per hour that they're expecting the motorists to travel on residential streets. I don't think the statistics back any of this nonsense. I will say, though, there are elections coming this fall, and any politician worth their salt is trying to get their name out in the media. And it's free advertising for them. And it's kind of hard to argue against, except that it's just silly. I don't think there's any actual data to support that people are being run down and so on and so forth, or feel unsafe and so on and so forth. I think it's too much, simply put, too much. The car or the motorists have been picked on, I guess, for decades. The fuel suppliers have been picked on for decades, and we're just seeing ourselves getting taxed straight out of our homes and our way of life. I think the when we elect socialist governments, though, none of us can be surprised that taxes will go up. I've actually lost count. I quit counting after, I think it was about 23 new taxes that the NDP government put into place for British Columbians, and now they're starting to use the equation of hidden taxes, like your last guest mentioned. In the petroleum industry, too, they raised the, it's kind of like an exploration fee on the leases. They raised it from 3% to 5% on the corporations that are trying to find this more fossil fuels in the interim until we get the green energy. And that'll just be absorbed by the customer, the end user. But there's no mention of it. And unless the, what would you say, and most people don't understand how this all works. The consumer is the only one that is going to pay all these increases. So with that, it's kind of, what would you say, the British Columbia government continues to increase their take on the fossil fuel taxes. And it's kind of hypocrisy or two-faced. They aren't really trying to help us. But getting back, I mean, anybody, I think, with any common sense understands that the NDP government for British Columbia, they're just lousy at housing. They really, did a miserable job of it. I can't even listen to their, what would you say, new policies. And you mentioned John's really sweating it out in that home trying to resolve this. I don't think so. No. I don't think so at all, Adam. I think they're more about raising taxes than anything else. They really want the government to basically arrange everything from how we put on our socks to where we live and so on and so forth. I did mention this one time before, and that was on my my natural gas bill. I burn about, say, $6-$7 of natural gas, the actual product. But after the taxes and fees, you're clipping, I think it's in just about $51-$52 per month for my natural gas bill. And so it goes, Adam. It's ridiculous to expect, I believe, to have the challenges turned around when the people that created the mismanagement of the economy is still at the helm, so to speak. I was at the, where was I at? I was putting in some new blinds, okay, at home here or whatever, and they changed the laws, which is no surprise, again, because of socialism. They want to control everything. There's no more strings or something on these Venetian blinds, and their argument is that they're dangerous to children, which they are, particularly if you have a parent who doesn't protect their child, but also pets. They were worried about pets being tangled up in the strings. Mm. And so the cost of one blind, I used to get them for about $21, $22. Very simple. It's kind of like in the shop. Okay, these ones cost me now $61. Okay? So as I say, no surprise here. And it's steady as we go. But until they run out of people that can pay these taxes, I don't see things changing at all, Adam. I just don't see it because they aren't listening. I mean, you've had lots of callers that are looking for suites, and they're right. There's nothing available. And get this, okay? Mm. You know, as an investor, I'm a very small landlord now. But when the NDP government came in and they started raising rents below the inflation rate, I mean, naturally, you get out of it. You start Airbnbs. And if that doesn't work, then you just sell the building and move on. And then people are left without suites. And this
somebody's got to buy the building, though. Like you don't destroy the building when you sell it.
Not a problem, Adam. I sold a couple of buildings, and they were both sold within a week.
Yeah, I know. But those suites still exist. They're not just destroyed.
No, both buildings were knocked down, Adam.
Oh, well, okay, I see what you mean.
Yeah, both of them. No one's going to get into the rental business for fun. I mean, come on. Investors are not your brother's keepers. So the idea of this facade, and you've demonstrated, Adam, that these suites still exist. No, they won't. No, they don't. Money moves.
So what got built there? I'm curious.
Pardon me?
What ended up getting built there when you sold and it got knocked down? Do you know?
The one is still under construction, yeah. So there's a duplex on the one, and it was knocked down, and now they're putting in 5 townhouses, okay?
Hmm.
And so I was paying approximately, I think the tax bill on that one, land tax, was around, say, $4,500 per year. Well, they'll get about $2,000 out of those easily. You'll probably get about $2,500 per townhouse on land taxes. So what does that work out to? About $10,000? Mm. So naturally, they don't want rentals. They want townhouses. And it's all about the money, Adam. It's not a mystery. It's all about the money. And to suggest, like the Horgan government, they suggest now they're talking about rent controls and so on and so forth. It's not going to work. It's simply not going to work. The investor is not your brother's keeper. And they, what would you say, they can't write policies and laws and rules fast enough to try and create this image that they're caring for the tenants. They aren't. They're selling you out, simply put. And I just, what would you say, I feel bad for the people that voted for these characters. Personally, Adam, I don't mind the NDP. I've mentioned this before. I'm kind of fond of John. But it's politics and policies that are destroying the community. And he's had ample time to stand up and show his soul, so to speak. It's not there. They're all about raising taxes and being two-faced. And eventually people are going to see it, and I guess they'll get the boot, and we'll try and straighten this mess out. But unless you are prepared to recognize the open market, Adam, watch out, because there isn't a government on the planet that can what would you say? Trump the open market. People are people and money moves. It's really simple. And they get elected by trying to persuade people that it's not the case. It absolutely is the case. I mean, just look at what happened with COVID when they started throwing money out to all these people. Now we're short employees. Well, it's not rocket science, is it? Why would you go to work when they're cutting you a check? I mean, it's really simple stuff. So, no, I think the bigger picture is they really are destroying the way of life, so to speak, in Canada, particularly, Adam. But to be fair to the politicians in Canada, Canada is built on the government knows best. Okay?
All right. I got to run, Don, but thanks for the call. Have a great day. 250-386-1161, star 1070, a free call on your wireless device. I've got 40 seconds before the news. Others on the board, if you want to sit tight, I'll get to your calls coming up right after the news. Texter 107010, I've got people telling me it's either the Lorentz force or the Hall effect that I'm talking about in terms of the upper limits on electric motor efficiency. You can never get to 100. was the point, and that there are drawbacks to all forms of conveyance that we have. But the internal combustion engine has always been notoriously inefficient in terms of thermodynamics, in terms of its upper efficiency possibilities. And you're only ever going to get about one-third efficiency. So two-thirds of all the chemical energy in that gasoline gets lost as heat. The other third eventually gets lost as heat anyway. Electric vehicles, for that reason, once we solve the energy capacity problem of batteries, and I think we're pretty much there, and we'll have more improvements still, are the future for that and many other reasons. That said, we're not going to build 1.4 billion electric cars in the next 5 years. And that's what we would need to do a full conversion of planet Earth. It's going to take longer than what we would hope for climate reasons. All right, quick break. Up after the news, we'll have Ray, Richard, and Rick. Don't go anywhere.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Good morning, Adam, with Texter writes, batteries do not make electricity. Yes, thank you for that astounding that astounding insight, Texter. They store electricity produced elsewhere. Oh, really? That's amazing. Primarily by coal, uranium, and natural gas-powered plants or diesel fuel generators. Not here in BC, Texter. Here in BC, usually we will enjoy the electricity that comes from our hydroelectric dams up in the interior. Sometimes you will have relief energy created, and this is, I'm not even sure if they run this much anymore, but there is a thermal plant in Burrard, in the Burrard Inlet area on the mainland, that they can turn on to create extra. We also have natural gas-fired electricity, even though we don't like to admit that we do. Why is that? Because Alberta, at least once upon a time, I'm not sure to what degree they still do this. My information is about 5 years out of date, so my apologies if it's no longer accurate, will turn on their natural gas-fired turbines to create electricity to handle supper hour increased electricity demand in Alberta. But they can't spin down their turbines fast enough to have the load accommodated on the grid. So instead of blowing out all the relays and whatnot they have on Alberta's power grid, they've suddenly got a bunch of extra energy that they don't know what to do with. So we here in BC, we get smart and we buy it off them. We used to do it every single day. Alberta would have excess energy after dinner because it can't spin down its turbines as fast as like flipping off a light switch. And all that energy has to go somewhere. So we used to throttle back our dams and we would use Alberta energy in the evenings, particularly here in BC, while just throttling back in our hydroelectric dams and having that water recharge behind the walls of the dams, much like a battery. But I digress. Energy economics is one of my interests. Those of you who didn't know me until COVID-19, would know that, but those of you who are newer listeners in the last couple of years probably wouldn't know I was just a huge energy economics nerd before the world fell apart. So to say EV is zero emission vehicle is not at all valid. Texter, I would take issue with the way that you have phrased that. It is not always valid, but that is different from saying it's not at all valid, because there are some circumstances and situations in which electric vehicles are truly zero emission, but you are correct in terms of the rest of the grid mattering and the ultimate source of that energy mattering. All right, let's go to our next call. It's going to be Richard. Richard, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Adam. How's it going today?
Good. I hear you want to apologize, it says on my text messages.
Yeah, I want to apologize to Kevin for yesterday.
He'll be fine. He doesn't need an apology.
Well, no. Anything else? I should not have used the phrase that he should shut up. For one thing, when he made his point about Canada Day, he owned it and said that he would be staying home because of land issues. He didn't suggest like so many sanctimonious hypocrites do that everyone should feel guilty and everyone should stay home. He owned it. And I should have found a better way to express my opinion about his opinion than to simply suggest that he should shut up. That's a form of censorship and I don't believe in it. So straight up apology. Shouldn't use the words shut up.
Is there anything else you said yesterday that you want to apologize for? Like when you said Roe v. Wade was the hysteria of the week? What about that?
Are you kidding? No, that is the most...
you can't be real. I refuse to believe that you are a real person who thinks these things.
Adam, can I leave one thought with you? And you can think about it, discuss it, or dismiss it, whatever. If we can all agree that the fewer abortions a society needs to carry out, the better. Now, I'm not saying I'm pro-abortion, anti-abortion, nothing, but the fewer that we need to carry out, the better. And so the overindulgence on that topic by people on the left and women to a large extent saying men shouldn't even have an opinion and a woman should be able to have 100 abortions, no questions asked, the typical overplaying of their hand by people on the left side of the spectrum has partially, largely led to this. So the fewer abortions we need to carry out, so better education, a little more personal responsibility before pregnancy happens, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and we'll need far fewer abortions, and then the argument won't have to be quite so contentious.
It wouldn't be so bad, though, if you didn't have the same people saying that abortion should be banned, also saying that birth control shouldn't be allowed. Just going to point that out.
Yeah, I agree. That's
good.
What I'm saying.
All right.
Yes, better.
There's some
better
consistency there. All right, let's leave that on a high note. Richard, thank you for the call. Yeah, because Kevin's the one who really got offended yesterday. And he's serious, by the way. Like, Richard is a little different, so I don't even know what to say. Texter 107010 says there's some pretty cool tech coming out for graphene batteries with respect to the energy density problem. And yeah, there are. Like, I'm fully confident that give it 30, maybe 40 years, you'll have electric vehicles, cars and trucks that you can plug in overnight and then just drive around without worrying about them for probably weeks. Like, literally. Now, energy is energy. And if you have that much energy packed into any power cell and something happens to it, like it ruptures or there's a problem or it overheats, one of the things that lithium-ion batteries and the associated problems with them have taught us is that a laptop battery has a lot of energy in it. And you find that out when it catches on fire and does all sorts of damage. As we see more and more widespread use of high-density batteries, and I mean high-energy density batteries, that energy exists in some form or another. Hopefully it gets released through chemical processes, through electric current. But if that sucker catches on fire, if you'll pardon the use of that term, it's going to cause a lot of damage. And we're already starting to see that. Texter 107010 writes, abortion should not be seen as a form of birth control. Okay, thanks for that opinion. Again, but remember what I said? People, oh, Roe v. Wade, it doesn't matter with Canada. It's not going to influence. It's already influencing us here in Canada. People want to talk about it. Why are we talking about this if there's no need to talk about this here in Canada? You know, my point, and I continue to hold by this, and I hope that all of you see this, is that those voices saying, this doesn't matter in Canada, we shouldn't pay attention, they're totally wrong. This matters a lot in Canada because it reminds us about this issue and it reveals the divisions that have always existed in terms of the electorate here that we had just forgotten about because we didn't talk about this much. So, somebody says if men were fined or jailed, there would likely be fewer abortions. I don't know, maybe. You know, if people weren't allowed to associate, there'd be fewer abortions too. Like, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the optimal solution. We can do all sorts of things to influence one certain socioeconomic factor in one medical procedure, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's something that would confer upon society a net benefit. Personally, I think that what we have in Canada right now is a solution that is functioning and that I don't think would benefit anybody if we started meddling with it, trying to improve it, because I think there's a very good chance we would accidentally make things worse, as we are prone to do, it would seem, despite what some may hope are our best intentions. That's just my position on this, as all of you know. Let's take a quick break. More calls after this.
You're listening to Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Texter at 107010 says, a meteor strike would also reduce abortions. Technically true. So would a global plague. So would the earth crashing into the sun. Yeah, all of these things would see reductions in that. But we can understand that there's more than one metric in terms of whether or not social policy is effective. And, you know, some of those things also cause a great deal of people to die horribly, which is perhaps not coincidentally the main problem and the main concern that we have here. By the way, I'm pro-choice. I always have been. I think that any society that honestly tries to use the apparatus of state to force a woman who does not want to have a child to carry a child all the way to term is, one, exercising vast powers that, quite frankly, I can't morally justify. Two, wasting resources that could be used. Like, imagine all the police that are going to be investigating women who may have had a secret abortion in the U.S. now. You imagine how much time, energy, and resources are going to be devoted to that? You imagine the court time that's going to be spent on that instead of child molesters and other horrible criminals out there getting caught? We're going to be investigating women who were pregnant and then suddenly were not pregnant. Maybe it was a miscarriage. Maybe it wasn't. What, are we going to have detectives working on that in the United States of America now to try to see if they got a back alley abortion and if so, prosecute them? Like, if you're going to make something a rule, how are you going to enforce that? Are we going to have women going to prison now because a miscarriage happened, but maybe it was an abortion and they end up before a judge and a jury that don't trust them, so they get found guilty, they get convicted, even though it is supposedly beyond a reasonable doubt? We can have prisons taken up by women now and their only crime was they didn't carry a child to term. Like, this is, I don't think people have thought this through. And I, like, I think that there's this idealized world that exists in some people's minds about how babies are born and about where people come from, and it's not the real world that we live in. It's not the complicated, messy, sometimes ugly world that we live in. Yeah, in fact, I don't even want to fall down this rabbit hole again. And I can feel myself accelerating in terms of emotional momentum here. But I will tell you one thing. There's a tweet that I saw on the weekend. I know, right? A tweet. There's nothing good on Twitter, especially stuff from me. But it's been bouncing around in my head for like 4 straight days. And I can't stop thinking about it. And if you haven't heard a message like this or seen a message like this, regardless of what side of this you are on, it's important that you are aware that scenarios like this exist. And it was a scenario where a man asked a woman, and the guy just, he had no view on Roe v. Wade. It was sort of like, maybe I'll take one side, maybe I'll take the other side. And he asked a woman, you know, if you got pregnant as a younger person and you could not have access to an abortion, would you think about killing yourself? And the woman said, yes, in an instant. And she said, but that's not what people have to worry about. And the guy said, well, what do you mean? And she said, what really scares me is women who get pregnant, who want to keep the baby, who have to worry about their husband or their boyfriend not wanting the baby, and absent an abortion, deciding to kill them to get rid of them and the baby because the man doesn't want to deal with that. That's the scenario that a non-zero proportion of women in the United States are not going to have to worry about and deal with. How is that justice? It's not. You know, we can argue edge cases both sides on this all day. I think that what we have here in Canada, nothing's perfect. What we have here in Canada is functioning. And I really think that there are unintended negative consequences that we are going to see happen in the United States that not a lot of people have thought about in advance that could have all been avoided. And that's where I stand on that. So here we are. Doug, you're on the air. How you doing?
Good morning, Doug. Doug.
I know. It's heavy out there. It's a heavy world out there, and I'm sorry. I didn't mean to have that heavy conversation then bring you into it, Doug. I apologize.
No. I'm not in my office right now, but I still want to say hi to everybody, all my friends that are working and that are in their offices. But the speed limits that both Victoria and Saanich are thinking of lowering, did they consult some of the specific groups that are going to be affected by it? The truckers and BC Transit. You start lowering the speed limits, transit is going to have to redo all of their routes and timings and schedulings.
Do you think they will, though? Really?
Oh, yeah, they'd have to, because some of the routes that Mayor Haynes was talking about are major transit routes. So you're going to, you know, you get slower buses, you're going to have to rejig all the schedules. And the other thing that I found out many years ago, the slower you go with your vehicle, the more ineffective the gas mileage is.
Is that true, though, or does it just seem like it? I almost feel like we need to get some cars together and do an experiment in terms of the, like, the actual quantity of gas that you use to travel that distance. Because it's true, it takes a longer time, but you also need to burn less gas to do it. So I still think you're better off going slower.
Actually, no. I did the test once I found out from, I can't remember what the article was from, though. But it was the gas companies that originally stated what the speed limits were to be, especially on the highways. And I tested it driving down to California. So, as I say, many years ago, because we couldn't get out of Canada for a while there. Anyhow, I kept track of my mileage, kept track of the gas I put in. When you hit Oregon, you go the speed limit because the fines there for even going 1 mile an hour over the limit are horrendous. Mm-hmm. And then I started going through California, and I actually went faster in California, and I used less gas than I did going through Oregon.
It's because you didn't do the stopping and starting, though.
Well, no, this is on the highways. This is all the highways.
No, that's what I know. That's what I'm telling you. But we're not going to be on the highway in terms of these slow residential speeds. You're going to be slowing down every time you go around a corner. You're going to be using your brakes every time you get to a stop sign. That changes the efficiency equation.
True, but I still think we're going to wind up using more fuel at a slower speed than we will at a higher speed. But my point still is that buses, they're going to be completely inconvenienced.
Well, we'll have to see, Doug.
Yeah.
I'm thinking out loud here.
One other thing I want to talk to you about, but that's another day.
Is it?
So, yeah. It's about one of the possible candidate. Oh, no, it is. It's about a candidate for Victoria Council.
Yeah.
I found out a couple of things about him, but I want to talk to you about that another day.
Okay, you'll leave us with bated breath.
Yeah, okay, we'll talk to you later.
All right, have a good day. Take care.
Bye now.
All right. 250-386-1161, star 1070, a free call on your wireless device. Texter at 107010 writes, it's been handed back to the individual states. They will manage it on their own. It's not a constitutional right. Your analysis, the texter writes, is stupid and uninformed. You think I'm stupid and uninformed, texter? Well, you can have that opinion. I'm getting a lot more people agreeing with me, though, than disagreeing with me here. Somebody else disagreeing. Adam, you must be kidding. It's working in Canada. Yeah, Canada's system that we have. Like all these horror stories that I'm always hearing about. I haven't heard about that happening here in Canada. Have you? Like, I know it's possible. We like to imagine worst case scenarios. But the system that we have in Canada, as far as I know, there's not all these horrors that we keep hearing about supposedly happening in the United States. It says Canada has no law on abortion. That means anything goes. That's not what that means, Texter. We also have no law on open heart surgery. Did you know that? Open heart surgery is not in the criminal code. That doesn't mean that there's no rules on how it can and cannot be performed on a patient. Medical regulators set guidelines on how surgery and medical procedures are done, not Parliament, not the criminal code. See, it's true that we don't have a criminal code listing for abortion here in Canada. We don't have statute. That does not mean that we do not have regulations that are in place. We don't have any number of other medical procedures and surgeries and whatnot in the criminal code either. And yet there are still rules with what surgeons are and are not allowed to do given certain guidelines. So to say there's no law does not mean that there are no rules, no norms, and no standards. I'm just pointing that out. Adam, a texter, writes, when I'm in the Langford crawl, my gas consumption goes up dramatically. I totally believe that. Again, the issue is stopping and starting. The issue is your brake. How often do you use your brake? That's what changes the equation. When you're in the crawl, you're using your brake constantly. In fact, you're sitting on your brake most of the time. Then you go forward a little bit. Then you hit the brake again to stop before you hit the car in front of you as you inch forward. Every single stop and start is wasted gas because that momentum that you build up that could carry you forward is bled off via heat energy into the air by the brake pads, is what I'm saying. So when we're talking about gasoline consumption in terms of speed, that's only one part of the equation. We also have to ask ourselves, how many times are we going to be hitting our brakes as we go from point A to point B? Every single time is less efficiency. And if you're in gridlock, which means that you hit your brakes 500 times as you go stop, start, stop, start, stop, start, stop, start, that's going to be your minimal efficiency point, I suspect, if that makes sense. 250-386-1161. Texter writes, hey, Adam, what are the rules on abortion in Canada? I don't know. What are the rules on heart surgery? What are the rules in using anesthetic on a patient? What are the rules on brain surgery? What are the rules on inserting a catheter? Just because these things aren't in the criminal code doesn't mean that there are not rules and norms and standards, Texter. I don't actually know what they are. My understanding, and this is going way back, is that it is remarkably uncommon to see an abortion on anybody in their third trimester. So if you want to split the 9 months into three-month intervals, as some of the laws in the United States have done, my understanding is it is remarkably rare to see a late-term abortion. It will only be done generally if the woman's life is in danger. Even second trimester abortions, my understanding is quite rare. First is what happens, but it's usually the late-term edge case scenario that I hear brought up in terms of the United States and the need for laws. My understanding, though, is that it almost never happens. And when it does, it's because the woman's life is in danger. And if they didn't do something, both mom and baby would die, which, again, is a horrible situation. But medical complexity and the complexity that happens in real-world situations is so intricate and so infinitely varied that trying to manage that through a tool as blunt as the criminal code or indeed provincial statute is not the best way to do it. I'm not convinced of that. I've never been convinced of that. Because the ham-fisted nature of the criminal code, and it is ham-fisted to some degree, we all understand that, would invariably get some things wrong and you would see the innocent punished. And isn't avoiding harm to the innocent the whole point? Anyway. Texter at 107010 writes, you are in so over your head, it's laughable, just stop talking about it. Well, you know, once upon a time, Texter, this issue was actually very salient, and it was leading up to the 2015 election. And I had so many debates with so many people about exactly why I had the positions that I did, for an obvious reason that, you know, most people know about, but apparently some of you don't, that I'm not in over my head. I know exactly what I'm talking about because this issue was very forcefully debated, you may recall, leading up to that election. I had to be versed in it. Let's go to Ray. Hey, Ray, how you doing? You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Adam?
Good.
You were talking about a new tax for things like food deliveries?
Yeah.
Okay, so for the drivers, they're already underpaid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you're going to make the food more expensive, I'll tell you what, the tips are going to go down. And drivers can't afford it.
Hmm. So what do you think will happen? Nobody will do the job?
I think you'll get a few people that do the job, but they're not going to make very much money. They're not going to be making minimum wage, that's for sure.
Hmm. So...
And because people see... they see like a $4 delivery fee, and then they're asked to give a tip. Well, people think, well, why should I have to give a tip? I've already paid. Well, you wouldn't expect your waitress... it to cost her money to take your food from the kitchen to your table, right? So it's really not a tip. It's a delivery fee, which is being underpaid at the beginning of the transaction.
Hmm. You know what, Ray? I'm going to have to think about this one before I form an opinion. Because I didn't even know how the taxation was going to work, and I'm still chewing it over in my head. It's on one track that's playing in the background. I apologize.
No problem. I just thought I would bring it up, give you something else to chew on.
All right, Ray, I appreciate it. You have a good day, all right?
Yep.
All right.
Day, Adam.
We're actually going to be talking about wildfire stuff as well. One thing I will tell you, though, and I'm looking at my text messages, there are a lot of people in Canada that want to ban abortion. There are a lot of people in Canada that want to introduce restrictions on abortion. And I keep getting told that it's settled and they don't. So I guess that's wrong. I guess this is a debate that we need to have. And depending on how elections could go, we could see laws introduced that restrict women's rights on abortion. See, I keep getting told that's fear-mongering and that's impossible. But I'm looking at text messages right now from people who want to do exactly that and will vote for whoever will do that. So I don't know. Maybe it's not legally settled in Canada after all. Maybe we could see change going forward. That's not what the Conservative Party wants you to hear, by the way, because they know that will destroy them because there's too many moderates who are pro-choicers in their caucus who would not allow it, and it's going to cause conflict. That's why Harper wouldn't allow talk about it and wouldn't allow bills to reach the floor to talk about it. He understood. I'm not sure if the current crew has the same sort of appreciation for the topic, though. Well, we'll find out. Quick break, back after this.